live from the Goggin Cold Hall Studios.
30 seconds.
And now the act you've all been waiting for.
This is the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show.
I am the smartest man alive.
Call Johnny now at 844-5600.
Funny name for a guy.
20 years of sports coverage. This is Nashville's sports original.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
On WNSR 560 on 95.9 FM.
And happy Wednesday, everyone. Johnny Ballpark Franks with you, along with Jay Henson, broadcasting out of the Goggin Cold Hall Studios, the coldest team in town, now offering great wages and benefits for drivers to join their winning team. If you'd like more information, it's simple. Go to their website, gogginkold.com. We'll be with you tonight until just after 6 when we turn things over to Braves Baseball. Well, unfortunately, they can't clinch tonight. But one of the things, you know, you go back to last night, and they make things interesting even in losses. But Braves baseball tonight, 6:05 for the pregame. First pitch at 6:20. But before we get to all that, coming up at 4:35, Joe Rexroad, award-winning columnist, now with The Athletic here in Nashville, previewing not only the Titans as they take on Jacksonville, getting his thoughts on Tennessee versus Florida, LSU coming to town, take on Vandy, and more. And at 5:05, speaking of the Braves, our good buddy Kevin McAlpin with the Braves Radio Network, our weekly visit with Kevin, talking Braves, the playoff races, and more. And then at 5:35, Chad Bishop, he covers the Commodores for Vandy247.com. Hey, by the way, I was just playing around with some numbers, and this is like, oh no, he's now a Tennessee Vols hater. Remember what I said on the show yesterday? I was talking to Barton Simmons, with CBSSports.com. I think college football is more interesting when Tennessee and Florida are more interesting, when that series means something again. Because, you know, you go back to the numbers, and look, I know it's the glory years, and I know that that's the past, and you can't always relive the past. But, you know, you can't ignore when Tennessee and Florida took the field, and you looked at the matchups where 7 out of 9 years, both teams were ranked in the top 10. The only exceptions, one was the year where Tennessee was 15th in 94. The other one when Tennessee was 11th. The other matchups, all top 10 every time these two teams would take the field from 93 to 2001. And that's what I miss. That's what I miss. And so I started looking at some numbers. And I know they're bad. I didn't know that they were this bad. And I couldn't help but throw the hashtag consistency, because I'm looking at what Tennessee has not done, not only against teams in the East, but also teams in the West. Since the loss to Vanderbilt in that final game of 2016, Tennessee 1-12. That's a winning percentage of 7.6%, by the way, against teams from the SEC East. And oh, by the way, the Florida Gators, they're in the SEC East. So 1-12, a 7.6% winning percentage, or should I say a 92.4% losing percentage. And then you go back to the other number, and I understand, well, wait, they play Alabama every year. All right, that's 5 games. What about the other 5? Since the start of 2014, Tennessee 1-9, a losing percentage of 90% against teams from the SEC West.
Is that good?
No. And the reason, you know, here we are. Only reason I bring up these numbers, here we are celebrating the 150th year of college football, right? And when you think about, you know, especially for the first 130, even 135.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the role Tennessee played. Not so much in the last 15. I mean, when you're even how bad you have been over the decade plus, if you're still one of the top 15 programs, tradition wise, everything wise, ever. That means you accomplished a lot way before then, because you're certainly not getting there with what you've done recently. I just bring it up because it's games like this. You know, Tennessee has talent to go down into Gainesville and win this game. Tennessee is on a business trip, so when they leave tomorrow to go down to Gainesville, they know they're on a business trip. It's 11 o'clock kickoff, which I think is great from a Tennessee perspective. I remember when I was at Florida State, when Florida State was rocking and rolling, you hated 11 a.m. kickoffs. because, you know, nobody, the fans certainly were not pumped up. The students were not pumped up. They were still trying to wake up. And you know, usually the team would wake up in the second half. I think this is an ideal situation for the Vols in the sense that they got a little bit of confidence with what they did against Chattanooga. I understand it's Chattanooga, but they still have a little confidence. And in your head, you can play it any way you want it, but the team they lost to in overtime, BYU, did beat USC, which was undefeated the week before. Now, USC, true freshman quarterback, they're going to be up and they're going to be down. Last week, they were down. So, you know, but if you need to use that as motivation, say, hey, maybe that loss wasn't as bad. Georgia State, who? You don't even think about Georgia State now. So when you think about what Tennessee has in order for them on Saturday, who knows? I'm not that confident in Dan Mullen's group, honestly.
No.
You know, there's some disconnect still there. Also coming up on the show, a chance to, as I mentioned, Kevin McAlpin in the second hour, along with Chad Bishop. But NFL talk, college football talk, whatever's on your mind, 615-844-5600. Jeff from the Borough, welcome to the show.
How you doing?
I'm really good. How about you?
Oh, not bad. Just want to say, just your Braves made the playoffs again. So,
no, well, they're not. Well, they clinched a spot, but I'm not thinking that. I want an East title.
What is your lead in the division? 8-9 games. You're going to win. Don't worry about it. You know what? You worry too much, ballpark. You always
not
you're
worry.
Always thinking the Braves are going to flounder and Nationals are going to come on.
I'm not floundering. My thing is I'm not opening up the champagne just yet. Just let it happen naturally, and then we can do it.
They'll have champagne pop though. Braves is only franchise can hang up division banners and celebrate them. So you know, they don't want a franchise can do that.
Like Rice Krispies, baby, snap crack. You know, it's like Kentucky on Saturday night. You know, they had the snap and they had the crackle, waiting to pop it there in that fourth quarter.
I agree. He took some chances, went for it on fourth down. I agree. They just couldn't get it done or whatever. But Frank's hurt that ankle. And Felipe Franks is goodbye. He said goodbye for the season now. We'll see him. And
I love, by the way, I don't know about you, I love the atmosphere in Lexington. I really got caught up in that. That, to me, because I don't have a dog in the hunt one way or the other, and I got caught up in how just the pure emotions of college football and that excitement, that was just...
We had it sold out, over 63,000, so they were there, no doubt about it, and hopefully they can get it done this weekend at Mississippi State. I think they can. I saw Mississippi State play Kansas State last week. Wasn't too good for them, some big games this week. Auburn, Texas A&M. I think Auburn's going to beat Texas A&M, and hoping Florida beats Tennessee. Don't really care either way, but hope Florida does. But you know, it should be a good game. But you know, I don't know if Tennessee wins. I think they'll forget about Georgia State and BYU pretty quick. So I'll just say that. What do you think about that?
Oh, they'll be like ready to build statues for Butch Jones again if they beat Florida on Saturday.
Well, I mean, you know, he's a champion of life, Paul. Ballpark, isn't that important?
I mean, look, if you lose, here's the thing, Jeff. If you lose and you go, there's still too many Butch Jones players. So if you win, do you not like honor Butch Jones by building a statue of him? Although it's Jeremy Pruitt's head coach, you can't have it both ways if you're a Vols fan.
He's a champion of life, ballpark. That's what you want. You want morals and ethics and athletics. That's what you know.
You know who's not getting grief? But I don't know about you. I don't know if you've seen Big 12 is using that Champions of Life model, and they're not getting any grief at all about it.
Hey, I know what you mean. Yeah. Well, enjoy the show, guys. Appreciate it.
Hey, we appreciate it. Thank you so much. 615-844-5600. Why is that, by the way? Have you noticed this?
Because I heard it the last week.
No,
yeah.
Big 12's got the big they've got this big program, and there's this is the way they showcase student athletes, et cetera, champions of life. And I'm thinking,
I died out laughing when I heard
it. Well, when I see it and when I saw it the first time, I'm thinking, I'm just waiting for a punchline. You know, look, I think it's great when you got all these I mean, look, is there a new one out there? I mean, every time I see it at Florida State, or excuse me, at FSU football on Twitter, and I see the hashtag do something, my first thought and reaction is always, we wish you would. I mean, is that wrong? Oh, no. Here's a good example today. And no offense to our fine friends with 24/7 Sports, but I was seeing this article, and they were pointing out the six top performers on defense for Florida State against Virginia. And I'm thinking, what? How can you have one, much less six, top performers when your team gave up 31 points against Virginia, has given up over 37 points a game in your first three games? How can you have a top performer on defense, much less six? God, give me a break.
I'm just trying to find some kind of positivity.
What? That's like, you know, that's like, okay, tonight, Jay, afterwards, let's go grab a bite to eat, maybe grab a beer, and instead of going, you know, to one of the nicer restaurants in the city of Nashville, let's go and find the list of the 10 that got the poorest scores in their latest rankings as far as the health department, and let's just pick one of those, one of the worst. And the, I mean, that's almost like the same kind of scenario. That's what I first, is that wrong on my part?
No, it's the same thing.
And maybe this is because I go back to an era before the, you know, player participation trophies, because we can't have Jay hurting our feelings by you winning an MVP award or anything.
I know, right?
So, you know, I bring it up because, I don't know, when I was brought up, when I worked in sports, that is not the way to make anybody better.
No.
Because if it's, what is happening is this, you know, the ceiling, everybody wants championships, right? But if you take that ceiling, it's just like sometimes you go in a house and it's like my living room area is not closed in, not boxed in. It's like two stories tall. So when we're the TV room, the fireplace and all that, it's very open, two stories tall, right? But that'd be like, well, but what, guess what I have trouble doing? You know, when the light bulb goes out, that's an ordeal for me. You know, because I could climb on your back. I'm not even going to come close to finding a way to get that.
Even so, on top of a ladder.
So, can you, and at 5'9", I'm already height challenged anyway. So, but I bring it up because if you can't reach that, so what do you start doing? You take the ceiling, you all of a sudden you build a ceiling above, you know, so you take it in and build another ceiling. And so you can, that way, oh, now we can maybe touch the ceiling, right, on top of a ladder or whatever. But that's what you're doing. When you can't achieve the goals that you want to achieve, you start taking that, the top, and you start bringing it down, and then you can reach it. Oh, hey, we met our goals. That'd be like you talk about a team in the offseason. Everybody's excited about offseason, about the upcoming season. Hey, we're pumped up. We maybe have a chance to actually win some games, be bowl eligible and all that, right? Well, that'd be like if you're in, you're out, you're winning two or three games, you know, be like Swanee. You know, we're seeing that special now on SEC Network. It's an 8-part series and talking about the formation and the importance of college football in the South and how the SEC was formed. Well, remember, Swanee never could win an SEC game. And so they get out of it right after 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
So it would be like instead of being 6-6, if your goal is awesome, well, we can't get to that number. Let's just have our goal now at 3 wins a year. Oh, so when you get it, it's like you're celebrating. You're having parades. You're building statues because we're 3-9 now. I don't know how we got on this topic, by the way. Oh, I know.
You're the one that pulled it up.
I guess.
Anyway. I don't know where you came with Swanee. We're talking about ceilings, now Swanee.
Well, I go back to the point because, you know, what have we heard in these first three games? Maybe not as much after the win against Chattanooga, but what did we hear after the first two games? Oh, those are Butch Jones's players. So if Tennessee goes down to the swamp, remember, too, this Tennessee team did beat two ranked teams last year in Auburn, at Auburn and Kentucky. They beat Auburn. I mean, so they beat Auburn and Kentucky. Kentucky enjoying one of their three best seasons since Bear Bryant was head coach. But if you go down, if you're Tennessee and beat the Gators, should we not be honoring Butch Jones since these are Butch Jones's players? Because that's what everybody wants Everybody wants to use an excuse. I mean, just like we see Marcus Mariota. Well, the reason he's still bad in his fifth year is because he's had all these different coordinators.
Or he's been hurt.
Has nothing to do with, you know, avoiding a sack by getting rid of the ball, hitting your safety valve pass to the left or right. Has nothing to do with any of that. No, it's his. He's had how many coordinators now in his fifth year?
He's had a terrible O-line.
Excuses. 615-844-5600. If you'd like to be a part of this show, as always, we know you have choices each and every day, and we appreciate you making our show and our station a daily destination. You're listening to Nashville Sports Radio.
Good afternoon. Heavy traffic out here now in the South Loop, the West Loop, just scrambling, trying to get out of the downtown area. A wreck on Briley Parkway near Dickerson Pike. Andrew Jackson Parkway at Tyler, still trying to finish up that crash. Be careful out here in the construction, 440 eastbound, coming past Hillsboro Pike up to the 65 split. Hey, celebrate autumn at Obergatlinburg during Oktoberfest, September 21st through October 28th. Check it out, obergatlinburg.com. I'm Commander Chuck, your on-time traffic.
This football season, your friends at Pickers Vodka are proud to introduce Pickers Unplugged, ready-to-drink canned cocktails, real vodka soda, no strings attached, zero carbs, zero sugar, and only 96 calories. Pickers Unplugged is available in four refreshing flavors, but because it's made with real vodka and not malt liquor, you can only buy it at your local liquor store here in Tennessee. To learn more and to stay plugged in, visit PickersVodka.com or stop by the distillery in the Nations and take a tour.
Let's consider the secret life of the innermost nesting doll. Living most of her life in the dark, inside the other nesting dolls, she has plenty of time to think, if she could. Sadly, she has no brain. However, when an innermost nesting doll hears that Geico not only saves people money, but also has been providing great service for over 75 years, she thinks it's obvious you should switch. Because yes, switching to Geico is a no-brainer. Pity the innermost nesting doll and her lot in life.
Welcome back to CarMax Will Buy It. Let's jump right back into the action. A used minivan with 200,000 miles. Cassandra.
CarMax Will Buy It.
That's correct. The car you're driving now. Cassandra again.
CarMax Will Buy It.
You're on a roll. Any car at all, no matter what. Jerry?
Is the answer CarMax Will Buy It?
That's right. Because CarMax buys all the cars, no matter what. No questions asked. CarMax Will Buy It.
Innsworth is a kindergarten through 12th grade coeducational independent school located on two campuses in Nashville, Tennessee. The school incorporates a nurturing community with a challenging program to create a unique, joyful environment where students can develop the intellectual agility, self-confidence, and discipline they need to excel. Visit our website at innsworth.com to learn more.
The Greg Vogue and Big Joe Show.
Joining us now, Frank Caliendo.
I tell you what, man, we're not about dreams. We're about nightmares.
I mean, in fact, six other guys who just get on this thing and boom, boom. I apologize for recognizing that Draymond Green has such a punchable face.
I mean, it's hard when somebody's that brilliant. That's all I can say.
Well, I could just pretty much read the phone book and everything would be good and funny.
Settle down over there, Jeff.
It's the Greg Vogue and Big Joe Show on WNSR 560 on 95.9 FM.
This is the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show, every weekday afternoon on Nashville Sports Radio.
Welcome back. Johnny Ballpark Franks with you along with Jay Henson broadcasting out of the Goggin Cole Hall Studios. 615-844-5600. You know, we look at the landscape for the SEC coming up on Saturday. We have five conference games coming up on Saturday. Not only Vanderbilt hosting LSU at 11 a.m., but the Gators hosting Tennessee, which we were just talking about. Two afternoon games, the CBS game on Saturday. This is an important game for both of these two schools. Auburn, just to show to themselves from a confidence standpoint that we are and can be real in 2019. And for A&M, already losing to Clemson, I mean, it was a non-conference matchup, but you still don't want to lose two games, although everything would still be in play for A&M as far as conference titles, et cetera, even with a loss. So you can make the case very important for both. But especially from an Auburn perspective, I really have, but I go back to the preseason, I'm still keeping with this because, you know, why change now? I love the defense for the Auburn Tigers as well. I still feel like they're going to go 10-1 going into the Iron Bowl.
Right.
So I'm not backing off that yet, especially with that defense. Now, as Jeff was alluding to from the Burrow, Kentucky is on the road bouncing back or trying to bounce back after that disappointing loss to the Gators. They're on the road taking on Mississippi State. Mississippi State, to me, beatable.
Very.
Is Kentucky better than Kansas State? Absolutely. Did Kansas State beat Mississippi State this past weekend? Yes. So, yeah, I'm good. If Kentucky can just bounce back. If they can't, like, as long as they don't have a hangover effect because they got outscored 19-0 in that fourth quarter when they had the 21-10 lead, if they can put that behind them, then, I like Kentucky to go down to Starkville and win that game.
Yeah, I don't see why they can't go to Starkville and get a dub down there. I mean, Starkville, I think Mississippi State, their defense wasn't as potent as I thought they would be. against Kansas State. And Kansas State, I mean, they show that their offense and their defense, they actually have a defense in the Big 12. So, I'm, you know, Kansas State was a little bit better than I thought, but I think Kentucky can go down there and beat them.
And this is a crucial game, too, on Saturday afternoon. The other conference game, you have Missouri hosting South Carolina. Remember, I mean, everybody forgot about Missouri because they gave the gifts to Wyoming and had that, you know, one score loss to Wyoming in the opening week.
Right.
Everything's in play for Missouri. This is their first conference game. And you look at the fact that the two teams they're playing in the SEC West, Arkansas and Ole Miss, the two worst teams in the West, right? So... And then you compare that to what Georgia has to deal with their two teams from the West when they take on Auburn and A&M back-to-back weeks in November. And the Florida Gators in mid-October, or excuse me, the first 2 weeks of October, they host Auburn, then travel to LSU. Missouri, these are games. Just take care of business in these kind of contests. And then you can even lose to Georgia or Florida,
right,
and still be very much in the thick of things as far as the SEC East is concerned. But then we also get to Saturday night, and boy, you know, when I think about it, kind of reminds me, honestly, back when there was no BCS system and coaches didn't get caught up in, you know, how these big marquee games would impact them, because there weren't a lot of bowl games either. Remember, just because you were, quote unquote, having enough wins for bowl eligibility, like Pac-12, which was then the Pac-8, if you weren't the champs, you didn't go to any bowls.
Right.
There was no bowl game. All right, so I bring it up because this matchup with Georgia and Notre Dame kind of reminds me of, you know, where an Alabama team, for example, in the same year would play a USC and a Notre Dame, or USC Nebraska, whatever. They would play power teams, you know the kind of tradition-rich teams.
Those marquee.
Yeah, and that's what we're going to get Saturday night. I mean, look, I hope that, to me, this has a chance to be a game changer with regards to how athletic departments moving forward view their football programs and realize, you know, it's great that we got these non-conference classic games in Atlanta or out in Dallas, et cetera. But you can't erase the fact that besides the 80,000, what's the crowd now at Sanford Stadium?
90, I thought.
Oh, yeah. It's 90, just under 93,000, yeah, which they're going to put temporary seats, so it's even going to be more. But when you're also going to get a crowd of folks between 70,000 and 100,000 outside the stadium just because they want to be a part of that environment and everything going on, if you're an AD for a cash-strapped athletics department, and you're going, how can we get more people to come to our football games? I mean, hello.
There you go.
There you go right there. I love this. And I think it's going to be an incredible matchup. And I think it's going to be one of these, hopefully live up to the billing. I know Georgia, to me, I don't have a problem with Georgia living up to billing. If there's a concern, it'd be, can Notre Dame hang with Georgia?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. Can Georgia... or can Notre Dame keep it within a score going into the fourth quarter? Because I think the line, wasn't the line like, man, 16?
No, it's not that high, but it's 14.
14, and, okay.
Yeah, and so it'll be going back and forth, 13.5 to 14, you know, going into this ball game.
And me, personally, I think that's too high. I think it should be around 7-10. I think that's the way I think it'll go. But, you know, that's what everybody thought a couple of years ago as well, and Georgia goes up there and completely – you know, dominates Notre Dame on their home turf.
Well, that was the start for Georgia in this run for 3 years, because
right,
nobody thought that they could go into Notre Dame and win that game. And to me, that helped that team from a confidence standpoint, and the reason why they went on to play for the national championship. How many teams would love to be in the situation Georgia found itself in, up by three in overtime? You just sacked Tua Tagovailoa, so it's 2nd and 26. How many teams feel good about their chances in that situation in overtime with a national championship riding?
A lot of people.
And then you go to last year. Certainly a disappointment. They had the lead, 2 touchdowns up on Bama. They blew the lead in the second half, and then they have to watch as their playoff hopes are dashed. And then we go to this year. Third time's a charm. A program that has not won a national title since 1980. But honestly, I go back. I love college football history. I love the buildup and the conversations around top games. And one of the, and I still, I have the 70 circled just because of,
you know, an LSU versus Notre Dame, even Ole Miss playing Notre Dame. You would see all these nice classic matchups.
Right.
And after, you know, and everybody's thinking about the SEC overrated, you know, the five teams in the top 10 in the country, all this, blah, 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 blah. I still go back when you think about signature wins already, right, from the conference standpoint. Remember, you've got a huge win for Auburn over one of the teams. And at the end, we still may be talking about a team that is going to be in that conversation for the playoffs in Oregon, right?
Yeah, it's true.
And then you go to week two with LSU, number six, beating number nine Texas on their home field. So this will be the third opportunity in 4 weeks for a team from the SEC to flex their muscles against major powers, whether Power Five or, in this case, Notre Dame being an independent.
Right. And just a traditional power. I mean, I think it's just going to be another signature. Can Georgia make the SEC another signature win and show why the SEC has been the dominant force in this country for the last 10, 15 years? And I feel like they will. I mean, I feel like this game, it's being hyped up. Yes, Notre Dame, I don't know if their defense can hang with Georgia's offense, but can Notre Dame's offense do anything with that Georgia defense? I think that's the biggest question.
Because here's the thing. After this week, not unless you can hope that a South Carolina can, when they host Clemson on November 30th, and they can knock off Clemson, this is really the last opportunity before you start thinking about college football playoffs and bowl games as far as signature moments. Because after this week, you know, you start looking at the schedule as far as the remaining non-conference games in the SEC. Florida against Towson, that's you can't hang a flag on that one. You got some Utah States on the board. Samford, not Stanford, Samford.
Out of Birmingham.
Out of Birmingham, Western Carolina. Don't forget Mississippi State. They may have a signature moment on November 23rd when they play host to Abilene Christian. So really, if you're looking for marquee moments, last really great opportunity, and so far really only one that the from an SEC perspective that they failed in, and that was Texas A&M, then ranked 12th in the country. They go in, and Kellen Mond was just—I still don't know what happened. Totally off in that first half, never could get into a groove, and yet they only lose 24-10 to Clemson.
Yeah, there was something confusing him in the reads. He just didn't look the same. He didn't look the same at all.
He had wide open receiver. He was just missing them.
Yeah.
He was just totally
pressing
off his game, and especially when you look at how important he was and the role he played. He was the best quarterback on the field in 2018 when those two teams met.
True.
And that was with Trevor Lawrence on the field and Kelly Bryant
Very true.
The field. So, there's a lot of signature moments as far as this weekend and opportunities. We'll get a better feel. And I still love the fact, and I always talk about them on our Saturday show with our Countdown to Kickoff Tailgate show, but the armed forces and what Army and Navy and Air Force all are doing, I love that. I mean, they only have one loss combined between them, and that was Army losing to Michigan in overtime. That's it. That's the only loss so far with the armed forces.
That's
squads.
Crazy.
So I love that. All right, and don't forget Citadel beating,
Georgia Tech.
So don't forget that one as well that just transpired over the weekend as well. All right, coming up on the other side, Chance talks some Tennessee Titans, Vols, Vandy, and more. Award-winning columnist Joe Rexrode with The Athletic here in Nashville. He's coming up. You're listening to Nashville Sports Radio.
Good afternoon. Heavy traffic out here now on the South Loop, the West Loop, just scrambling trying to get out of the downtown area. A wreck on Briley Parkway near Dickerson Pike. Andrew Jackson Parkway at Tyler, still trying to finish up that crash. Be careful out here in the construction, 440 eastbound, coming past Hillsboro Pike up to the 65 split. Hey, celebrate autumn at Obergatlinburg during Oktoberfest, September 21st through October 28th. Check it out, obergatlinburg.com. I'm Commander Chuck, your on-time traffic.
R&M Printing in Mount Juliet is reminding everyone to please give blood. By doing so, you may save the life of a child, surgery patient, or accident victim. So give blood. It's safe, it's simple, and it's needed. This community reminder was a courtesy of R&M Printing, located at 7803 Lebanon Road in Mount Juliet, specializing in company logos, t-shirts, polos, hoodies, jerseys, and more. Call 615-453-5770. That's 615-453-5770. And like them on Facebook, too. When it's time for new flooring in hardwood, the choices can be mind-numbing.
Who do I call? Who can I trust? Locally, Brazza Flooring is a leading expert in floor installation and services and makes the process easy. Brazza Flooring offers a wide selection of flooring options and hardwood supplies and will work with you to help you decide which selection works best for you. Once you make a decision, they'll handle the rest. Nobody does hardwood floor installation better than Brazza Flooring, and they do it fast without sacrificing quality. Brazza Flooring provides the best service at an affordable price. Their passion for flooring and extensive experience means no job is too big, too small, or too difficult. Call 678-826-7798. That's 678-826-7798. Or go online at BrazzaFlooring.com and follow them on Instagram. Brazza Flooring, where they strive to please and guarantee complete satisfaction.
What you reading?
It's called The Ledger. There's a great column on the Titans.
So it's a sports publication?
No, not just sports. Like, see here, there's a great cover story on why Middle Tennessee's real estate market is so hot. The Ledger has stories written by some of Nashville's best, most experienced journalists. And you can get all the information on the Mid-State's fast-growing restaurant scene. There's profiles of community leaders and data that helps generate leads for my business.
And sports?
Yes, including UT coverage from Knoxville.
Expensive?
Is free expensive?
Free, huh?
Yeah, grab you one at hundreds of locations and tnledger.com. It's The Ledger. Pick one up today.
Bi-State Forecast.
Your exclusive Nashville Sports Radio WNSR SkyCan forecast. For today, sunny and warm with a high 97. Tonight, a little bit cooler and comfortable with a low 70. Thursday's going to be mostly sunny with a high 93. And for Friday, more sunshine with a high 90. Utilizing the resources of the WeatherBug Network on Nashville Sports Radio. I'm WNSR Shannon Holly.
Sports Radio WNSR.
Take Johnny Ballpark Franks on the go by downloading the WNSR app. Search your app store for Nashville Sports Radio.
Welcome back, Johnny Ballpark Franks with you, along with Jay Henson, broadcasting out of the Goggin Coal Hall Studios. This segment brought to you by Picasso Auto here in Nashville. Don't forget, coming up just after 5, Kevin McAlpin with the Braves Radio Network. But going back to the hotline, Joe Rexroad, award-winning columnist with The Athletic here in Nashville. Chance to talk some Titans, Vols, Vandy, and more. Joe, I know you're getting ready to head out to Jacksonville. First of all, welcome back to the show. And your thoughts when you see Tennessee, Jacksonville? My first thought, always, knowing that, oh, if it's Tennessee and Jacksonville, you've got a 50-50 chance to feel like that this will be a Thursday night game, because it always is.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I think that's pretty much every year, right? Since I've been here, I think every year, so... does that mean it has major primetime appeal?
It means that everybody has to, all 32 teams have to appear at least once in primetime, and this is a way of killing, two birds with one stone.
That's right, killing two, lesser markets in the NFL.
But if you want to, like, use it and fluff it up and all nice and use that spin saying, hey, because it's such an important game, great way to start off another week of NFL.
That's right. Division rivals, baby. But, yeah, of course, now I've always thought, too, even long before coming here, of, that sweep in 99, because I was so sure, as a, you know, just as a casual NFL fan, that the Jaguars were going to get their revenge. And I was like, man, I still remember that game pretty well. And then, of course, the Derrick Henry run probably ranks pretty high in Jags Titans lore at this point, too.
Well, you bring that up because that first go around, even including those three wins in that 99 season, that was the first time that Tennessee won five straight. They pulled it off again with the second game of 2001 all the way through both games of 03. So two stretches of five straight wins. With a win tomorrow night in Jacksonville, they can equal that stretch. They have won four straight against the Jaguars.
Yeah, and I believe the last loss would be very damaging in many ways, more ways than one.
Absolutely.
The end of 2016 with, the division right there for the taking, and, of course, Marcus Smart, you could look at that, and I haven't done a, deep statistical dive on this, but you could look at that play, Mariota breaking a leg, and kind of see, you know, a dip in his overall performance since that moment. And some, and watching him last week, you know, I think there are times that I think he's, you know, he's seeing things out there, or he's feeling pressure that isn't there, which is human nature, especially if you've been hurt in this game as a quarterback. And yeah, I wonder, you know, if that play still has some kind of an impact on him.
Well, you know, you bring up a good point, and I've asked this question, and I don't have never really gotten a honest or really, you know, a total honest answer about this. Do the Tennessee Titans have a psychologist on board? Because, you know, we talk about mental toughness. We know that, you know, Nick Saban is proud of the fact that he embraces that and has embraced it back to his Michigan State days. I bring it up because I totally agree. Marcus Mariota has not been the same since he got injured and he fractured his leg against Jacksonville at the end of 2016.
Yeah, and as far as the psychology, it's a good question in terms of do they have one on staff. But I think every, you know, college and pro, you know, major sports team has one on retainer anyway, you know. And I have there have been occasions here of guys talking to a sports psychologist. So, yeah, I would imagine Marcus has. That's a good direct question for him personally. But, you know, I mean, Marcus Mariota can sit there and break down film and analyze himself and talk through anything, but there's just nothing. And you know, he can go out and practice and stand in the pocket and get to his third read and you know, step into a throw and deliver. But it's just, you just can't replicate what it is when you're out there and people are actually coming at you and trying to hurt you, you know. And I do think that there's, if you want to talk about this particular situation now, he knows Taylor Lewan's not out there, you know, and the Titans are trying to help Dennis Kelly. And Dennis Kelly is a tremendous third tackle, but he's a third tackle, and he's also a more natural right tackle. And so, you know, you gotta keep all that in mind too. I think that Mariota understands that he is, you know, is right now not as protected as well as he will be.
Well, but here's the thing. You know, that's fine, and everybody understands that. There's not one person associated with that offense that doesn't get that, especially these first 4 weeks. But back to your point, as a fifth year in the NFL, it's really simple. You know, if you're, you know, quickly go through your reads, but you don't have all day back there, and then know where the ball is as far as, you know, do a check down and throw it away. Throw it to, you know, to the flat one way or the other. I mean, you talk about how costly that was. That sack there in the fourth quarter made a 36-yard field goal, a 45-yard attempt, and it was missed. You know, but it's just simple things like that over and over. And this is not where you can, like, well, he's going through his, what, fifth offensive coordinator in 5 years, blah, 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 blah. Forget about all that. It has nothing to do with your footwork, how many steps. Because in the NFL, unlike college football, and although in college you still have timing routes, but your window of failure is so much wider in the college level compared to the NFL. You've got tight windows there. And, you know, you should be throwing the balls before your receivers even make their break. So when they make the break, bam, the ball is there. You can't wait till after they make their cuts after 10 yards and out before you throw the ball, because in most cases, you're talking about throwing the ball out of bounds anyway if you're going to make a completion.
Right. Yeah, and I agree. And that's, you know, some people call it throwing guys open. He does not do that much or very well. And you're right. I mean, that was a hugely costly mistake by him in that game. And it was just way too much time elapsed for him not to have known, just sail it somewhere, you know. And that's just one of those things, especially to your point, like I just said, he knows the protection is just not going to be great a lot when they're in obvious passing downs. And that's a big part of why they're 3-for-20 on third down in two games. So knowing that, the clock should be sped up, if anything. And so that was that play right there. Maybe that's the difference in the game if they don't lose that yardage and Santos can make the field goal. You know, as far as – I mean, look, I agree there are no excuses. The fifth year, the weapons, whatever. I mean, you know, this is the year of evaluation. So and I think most people come to terms with that. You know, I also – going on the other side of it, you know, I think back to Nissan Stadium last year. Most people would call him the greatest quarterback ever. Looked like he was seeing ghosts and was just awful all day long. Tom Brady, awful. completely buried early by that pass rush, and I swear he looked like a rookie quarterback or like a 40-something quarterback who was done. And obviously we know what happened from there. So there are bad days. But Mariota just doesn't have too many left of them. He's running out of mulligans here.
Well, the biggest thing, too, is that, you know, you, from your franchise quarterback, you want some consistency. Like, okay, nice what you did against Cleveland. Do it again. Can you put together two or three games in a row like that? And that's the problem. I mean, even Blake Bortles, even as bad as he was able to put together four or five games like that where he was, you know, ratings-wise, at one point was the number one quarterback in the NFL his final full year as a starter. I mean, think about that. As bad as Blake Bortles was, he put together a five-week stretch there where he was the better than Brady, better than anyone, best quarterback in the NFL. Then he went back to being Blake Bortles again.
Right, right. Well, and there are stats out there with Mariota in particular, you know, comebacks.
Don't throw that one out. No, I'm going to nail that one. That's like an 82-mile-per-hour fastball with no movement. You know why? You cannot create your own fourth-quarter comebacks because you were so lousy for the first two and a half quarters.
Okay, so why are Breeze and Brady on the list? So they count on the list, but Mariota doesn't?
Well, no.
I mean, he's got three straight winning seasons.
No,
right?
But the difference is how often do you see Tom Brady struggling for two and a half quarters?
Well, like I just said, we watched him stink.
Well, that was also a game. Remember, he was without Gronkowski, you know, one of his main weapons for that game. So somebody that you rely upon, I mean, you go back to 2014, after the fourth week of the season when Kansas City beat the Patriots, everybody was talking about, oh, this is it for Tom Brady in 2014. What have you done for me lately, Mr. Brady?
Yeah, well, look, like, there's no reason to ever compare Mariota to a Brady or a Breeze, but I'm just saying that list isn't peppered with a bunch of bad quarterbacks who just happen to create close games for themselves. I mean, you have to still give credit for a guy who makes plays when it's absolutely most important in close games. The NFL
in Marcus Mariota's case, that's a very overrated stat because of how lousy he played. Because you go back to those games. It wasn't like you're talking about 38 to 35 shootouts where he pulled. No, it was talking about games where he stunk up the joint. The defense kept the team in place to keep the Titans, giving them a chance if he just did something, just anything. I mean, I go back to Monday night. If, you know, if Adam Gase had just, like, kicked some field goals there, it was 23-9 if he kicked the field goals. And then here's the Jets inside the red zone there. They could have scored a touchdown, had been down by one score with just over 7 minutes to go. And the Jets were, you know, lousy. They're on their third-string quarterback. But the opportunity was there if you just kicked the field goals. So you can make the game and make the stats play out any way you want. You can spin them any way you want from a positive light if you want to.
That's fine, and I don't have the information in front of me. I'm going to right now dispute your contention that every one of those games was Mariota stinking.
I did not say every one of them. I said a majority.
I'm going to go.
You go back. I'm curious. You go back that because that'd be an interesting column.
Yeah. No. I will be because I think you're right in some cases that you know it's like okay, well the game didn't have to be close. You guys should have been up 10 points because you could have played better. But you know, look, I mean, Mariota's had great games. He's had a tremendous season. It feels long ago, and as we talked about earlier, it was before that broken leg. You know, the guy's capable of doing good things. But, yeah, I mean, look, we're at the point now where it's decision time, and, you know, this conversation in the city is never-ending. And I imagine it's like that in any NFL city with a quarterback like this who's just sort of on the fringe. And, you know, the decision is not just on him, but it's on, okay, look at the rest of your team, and are you prepared now to go into quarterback development mode? Because now some of these guys you're paying good money to and are kind of maturing and you're kind of growing this team together. You know, it may be all past prime and you know, out of money, and this guy has to leave, this guy has to leave before the next quarterback gets ready. I mean, that's part of the whole process and dilemma here too.
I'll give you a couple of quick examples, by the way, to the point about Marcus Mariota. You go back to week two against Houston. The Titans get up 14-0. Well, actually, that wasn't Marcus Mariota. So that's going to be one of these things where you have to go to game to game because, oh, he was out that game. So, but you can go down the landscape over his time in those games you're talking about. And I'm gonna throw it out there. I think it's safe to go out the fact that over half of them were ones he created because of lack of activity and productivity with his squad you know, over the first 2 to 3 quarters.
Okay. And I would still say if you're a hitter and you go 0-for-3 in the first, and then in the ninth inning you hit the home run to win the game, you're a Hall of Famer. But, I hear what you're saying.
Oh, so you're saying Marcus Mariota is a Hall of Famer now.
No, I'm
well,
not
you know,
saying,
I will say this: he's got the same percentage, winning percentage, as Eli Manning. Just throwing it out there, but you know, I'm pretty sure Eli Manning will be a Hall of Famer because he actually can be great when he needs to be and winning 2 Super Bowls. I don't think we're going to get great like that from Marcus Mariota.
Yeah, no, not a Hall of Famer, but my point being that you know, if you're going to do it at any point in the game and you do it at the end, that is certainly when you want to do it.
All right, Tennessee versus Florida on Saturday. Look, you eventually got to start winning these games, whether it's Florida or Alabama. I mean, the streaks are just getting really, really bad when you're thinking about what Tennessee has not done, whether it's against Florida or Alabama. I mean, since 2005, UT 1-13 against Florida. They've lost 8 straight in Gainesville. They're 1-16 in the last 16, excuse me, 1-15 in the last 16 meetings in Gainesville. And then the other one, obviously the ugly one, 0-12 versus Alabama since 07. If you're one of the top 15 programs of all time in college football, you've got to turn this around eventually.
Yeah, well, one of them, it's not even worth talking about right now, right? I mean, it's just they're miles and miles apart from Alabama. This one, and especially this game, I mean, I just happen to think that Florida is one of the worst top 10 teams I've ever seen. I mean, and again, they're okay. They're an okay team. Obviously, they also have a quarterback situation now with a backup who played really well in relief, by the way, Kyle Trask. But, this is I think it's an opportunity. And I'm not saying I like the Vols in this game, but, this is the first time this season that they, are going in as underdogs in a game. And obviously, they've gone through a lot already this year. But, I just think Florida is – right to be upset here at some point. And, they're a pretty good defensive team. They're a pretty good offensive team. There's nothing to me special about Florida. And Tennessee has to be way better up front on defense to have any chance. And Jarrett Garantano has to be way better. But I think especially in the second part of that, it's possible. He has a big game and they can get those running backs loose. I think this could be a lot more interesting than probably a lot of people think.
LSU coming to town against Vanderbilt coming up on Saturday morning. Before Georgia took on Vanderbilt, I just saw some chances. Keyshawn Vaughn, a couple of big 80-yard touchdown runs, a chance for Georgia to maybe, assuming for Vanderbilt to make that interesting against Georgia. I'm just not seeing scenarios as far as LSU, tripping up and getting tripped up by Vanderbilt on Saturday.
No, I don't see that either, especially – now that all of a sudden, Coach O and LSU are this fire wagon, spread it out, throw it around offense. You think about how many years LSU just had great defenses and great offensive talent, but just bad offenses. And, boy, I think they look like a contender right now, like a real contender for the whole thing. We'll see on that. But, I don't see the scenario. They're just so loaded on D and then, Joe Burrow's playing at such a high level. I guess if you're Vanderbilt, you hope to be competitive. You hope to have some positives out of this game, and you hope to come out of this game healthy because, you're battered emotionally at 0-3, and especially just as poorly as you played at Purdue. But there's a lot of opportunity on this schedule after this, and you've got to get through this game and see that.
By the way, the perfect example I would give you for Marcus Mariota, because he got a lot of credit for that overtime win against the Eagles last year. Remember that one? Everybody talked about, this is great. Corey Davis, Marcus Mariota, this is why we drafted these guys. In the first 42-plus minutes of that game, the Tennessee Titans managed only 3 points. 3 points. It was 17-3 late in the third. So that's a perfect example of what I'm talking about, where you create your own comebacks. When you're so lousy for over a half of the game that, you shouldn't get total credit for that because you put your team in that position in the first place.
So you have the stats on that? What do you end up with passing-wise?
Let's see real quick. I know there are big numbers at the end. Oh, here they are. He was 30 of 43, 344, 2 touchdowns with 1 interception.
Yeah. I mean, look, I hear what you're saying, but like if every even great quarterback was good every quarter, then they'd throw for like 500 some a game, right? I mean, you know, it's that game I don't think is your best example because they exploded in the second half, and certainly.
Well, no, in the fourth quarter. They scored their first touchdown. It was 17-3, and they scored with 2:51 remaining in the third quarter. Let me ask you this: for the glory stats that Marcus Mariota had that day, if you asked anybody that were Titans fans in that stadium at that moment with 3 minutes remaining in the third quarter, would anybody have said Marcus Mariota is having an incredible game today? Absolutely not.
No.
Thank you.
No, but
maybe his family would.
Well, no one's going to look at a 30 for 43, 344, two touchdown win over the Super Bowl champs and say, yeah, but the first three quarters you were bad, right? I mean, like, you could flip this around either way you want to do it.
Well, you could also complete a lot of passes for 6 yards and thinking you're having a great day, too.
I think I know where you stand.
Thank you. I think you know where I'm going with that. All right. Remind everybody again what they can expect when they go to the Athletic.
Yep. Just, of course, John Glenn and I will be in Jacksonville. He's got a great story right now on Derrick Henry and his 502-yard high school record-breaking game. It just makes me shudder to think of high school kids tackling him back then. It wasn't that long ago. And then, of course, we'll have tons of coverage from that. And I'll be at the Vols Gators in Gainesville Saturday, too. So we got – and David Ubbin has some great ball stuff up there right now, too.
Hey, we appreciate you. Be safe in your travels. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Thanks, Johnny.
Thank you. Joe Rexroad once again with The Athletic. We'll be, of course, with you again next hour. A lot of Braves talk, college football, and more. You're listening to National Sports Radio.
Good afternoon. It's busy out here on the South Loop, the West Loop, just scrambling trying to get out of the downtown area. We saw a couple of wrecks down through there earlier, 40 East, not too far off the South Loop. Maybe there near 2nd and 4th. Traffic's on the increase now big time out here on 24 as you make your way back towards Rutherford County. Murfreesboro on 24 East here trying to get through that construction at Hickory Hollow Parkway. Celebrate autumn at Obergatlinburg during Oktoberfest, September 21st through October 28th. Check it out, obergatlinburg.com. I'm Commander Chuck. You're on Time Track.
The final lap with Kerry Murphy is on.
NASCAR Xfinity Series action going down from the desert at Las Vegas Motor Speedway this weekend, and the last race for drivers to get themselves into the playoffs for this series. Tyler Reddick making a statement with a win to round out the regular season, hoisting the trophy for the regular season championship.
Oh, you know, just our guys, Randall did a great job letting me know early on what we needed to do, and we're able to run the shortest distance around the racetrack and save some fuel. And, you know, it's really cool to win a few. It's really cool to win races this way because, you know, I feel like we've given a few races up that should have been ours. So you always look back and think that way, but it's kind of nice to kind of sneak in and take advantage of a certain situation and make the smarter choice. And, you know, we didn't have anything to lose where we were, so we were able to come down and just mix it up, and it played into our hand. If we would have had a caution with 10 to go, it probably would have been interesting, but it worked in our favor, so I'll take it. We'll all take it, and it was a good way to cap the night of capturing the regular season championship and get 5 more playoff points.
Christopher Bell took home second place, followed by Brandon Jones, Cole Custer, and Justin Allgaier rounds out the top 5. 12 drivers head to their playoff system, but here's the top 6 seeds heading into Richmond this coming weekend. Short track action, Justin Allgaier is in 6th place. Then it's Chase Briscoe, Austin Cindric, Tyler Reddick, and these two each with 6 wins on the regular season, Cole Custer and Christopher Bell.
Like us at facebook.com/thefinallap.
The 2019 Ford F-150 is... Wait, what's the word? How would you describe something that has a body made out of high-strength, military-grade aluminum alloy? Something with best-in-class torque and payload that can tow up to 13,200 pounds. And something with the smarts to know that even after being able to do all of that, you can always use a little help from available Pro Trailer Backup Assist. Oh, that's right. I remember the word. It's tough. The 2019 Ford F-150. Built Ford tough.
Max towing is achieved on F-150 XL Super Cruise. 6.5-foot box, 3.5-liter EcoBoost, 4x2, and max trailer tow package. Max payload is achieved on F-150 XL regular cab. 8-foot box, 5-liter, 4x2, and heavy-duty payload package. Class is full-size pickups under 8,500 pounds GVWR. Max towing varies based on cargo, vehicle configuration, accessories, and number of passengers. Max payload varies based on accessories and vehicle configuration. See label on door jam for carrying capacity of a specific vehicle. Towing and payload are independent attributes and may not be achieved simultaneously.
Every weekday afternoon, it's the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show on Nashville Sports Radio.
Welcome back, Johnny Ballpark Franks with you, along with Jay Henson, broadcasting out of the Goggin Cole Hall Studios. Don't forget, coming up tonight, 6:05 for the pregame, first pitch at 6:20, game two of this series between the Braves and actually make that game, it is game two against the Braves and the Phillies. And then they'll wrap up the series, by the way, coming up tomorrow, a day game from Atlanta. But on the mound tonight, Julio Teheran, 10-9 on the year, 3.50 ERA. The Phillies will counter with Zach Eflin. By the way, Washington lost earlier today to St. Louis 5-1. That means the magic number for the Braves is now down to 2. Combination of 2 wins by the Braves and or losses by the Nationals. And for the second straight year, the Braves will be your National League East champs. Kevin McAlpin joins us to talk more about this at the top of the hour with the Braves Radio Network. And at 5:35, Chad Bishop, he covers the Commodores for Vandy247.com to talk LSU Vanderbilt. That's all coming up in hour number 2. Stay with us, everybody.